Busy week heading into the final month of session, including the constitutional obligation for the legislature, and that's the budget.
That's right. So we passed the budget this week. It's divided up into 13 separate House bills covering a variety of different topics. Everything in the budget is kind of broken down by category, everything from primary and secondary ed to debt servicing to higher education. And so we went through and passed the entire budget. Of things that are of particular note, at least to our district, we have one state university in the district that receives state funding, and that's Missouri Western up in St. Joe. And so one of the proposals that was originally put out in the governor's budget was to increase funding for infrastructure and capital improvements on each of the campuses. And one of the things that happened during the budgeting process, both in the House and the Senate, is they let that money be put into core funding, meaning that the university can put it in their general revenue and decide however they want to spend it. And so each of the universities, including Missouri Western, got an additional $1 million added to their core budget. The significance of that is that since it's a part of the core budget, that increase, absent a cut, should continue in years going forward, and so it's just a much bigger impact than a one-time $2 million proposal that would have increased funding one time for capital improvement. So that was a great win for the university, great win for higher education. And then we also have a grant for Missouri Western for the nursing school, thousands of dollars that are going to be put towards the nursing school to help with workforce readiness. Again, that was part of the governor's original budget, and we were able to keep it in on the Senate side. Other big issues of note, we fully funded, again, the foundation formula for primary and secondary education. I think that's really important. Education is one of the most critical services the state provides to its citizens, and making sure that we're adequately funding our colleges and four-year universities, and also making sure that we're funding K-12 education is important, and obviously we put a big priority on that when you look at the budget.
Before that was taken care of, another budget-related item, which relates to Medicaid reimbursements for hospitals, commonly called the FRA bill, was also put through.
Right, so we have the FRA, which is, some people call it a tax, some people call it a user fee. It's the third, I believe, the third largest line item in the budget in terms of the amount of revenue that's generated. I think first is the income tax, then the sales tax, then the FRA. And as you said, the FRA allows us to draw down federal Medicaid dollars, which we then use to help subsidize health care for people who are unable to afford health care. There was a provision in the bill that would have added an additional $20 million to the FRA to pay for managed care. That was ultimately stripped out of the bill. We had a late night filibuster Tuesday night. We went until around midnight, and then ultimately the compromise position that was reached was to remove the $20 million increase for managed care. There was also a attempted amendment to the legislation that would require a work requirement for receiving Medicaid funding. Basically what it said is you have to be working or trying to find a job in order to be eligible to receive these benefits. And to me, that makes a lot of sense. We had a similar measure that was attempted to be attached to the bill that I voted in favor of earlier in the week. This provision really goes to great lengths to make it as easy as possible for somebody to meet the working requirement. So for example, giving care for your own children counts as working under the bill. I thought that was a pretty basic measure. It was ultimately filibustered, so that ended up not making it onto the bill.
Also this week, as we've talked about before, the House bills are now over here and we're starting to debate those as well. One of the House bills that deals a lot with the aspects of sex trafficking.
Yeah, that's right. So sex trafficking has been increasingly an issue that has come to both national and state attention as we've seen these sex trafficking rings being broken up. It's something that you would like to think would not happen in a first world country like the United States, but unfortunately we know that it does. Something that state attorneys general have been vigilant and fighting, and is something that we are now being vigilant fighting at the state level. So we've heard several bills, some of which have come through the Judiciary Committee that I chair, but this was the House bill, and this is sort of an omnibus bill, which for the listeners that aren't familiar with an omnibus bill, that's basically at the end of session. We're running out of time, and so we have to put a lot of similar measures. There may be bills that have been sponsored by multiple representatives or multiple senators, and we put them all into one package under a single subject. And so this was sort of the omnibus child sex trafficking bill. It's an important thing to protect kids, to protect people who are the most vulnerable in our society, and I'm happy we're able to get that House bill passed and hopefully to the governor's desk.
By the same token of House bills in the Senate, Senate bills, and in your case, Senate Joint Resolution 14 over in the House now.
That's right. So we passed my SJR, which imposes term limits on all statewide elected officials. officials. Currently in Missouri, the Attorney General, the Secretary of State, Lieutenant Governor, and the Auditor are not subject to the 8-year term limits that are imposed on the Governor, the Legislature, and the State Treasurer. To me, that just seemed to be arbitrary. People are supportive of term limits. They don't want people becoming career politicians down here in Jefferson City. So we were able to get that legislation out of the Senate last week, and we had a hearing Wednesday morning in the House, bright and early, right after the filibuster ended. So we had a filibuster, it went till midnight, and then we had a hearing in the House the next morning at 8 a.m., so I was pretty tired on Wednesday. We had a great hearing, just talked to the chairman of the committee, and we're hopeful that they're going to be able to vote that SJR out next week, and then hopefully we can get that to the floor of the House and get it passed and send it to voters so they can make the decision of whether they want term limits for all their statewide elected officials.
A lot of talk this year, and a lot of legislation that deals with sports betting. You brought in some star power to talk about that this week as well.
We did. So I have an amendment that I tacked on to the sports wagering bill. So just to kind of educate folks on this, the Supreme Court came out with a decision, the United States Supreme Court came out with a decision last year that said that states are allowed to have sports wagering betting in their casinos are run through their gaming commissions. And so what Missouri is contemplating doing right now is legalizing sports betting, both mobile sports betting, so you could bet from your phone, and then also sports books inside the actual casino. Missouri does not have that right now. We realize that sports betting happens already. It's just being done illegally. Of course, the state loses revenue whenever it's done illegally. What we're trying to do is make sure, and this is what my amendment does, is that if we end up having sports betting in Missouri, making sure that it's appropriately regulated to A, protect consumers, to make sure that people who are betting are able to rely on reliable data. What the amendment says is that if there is sports betting in Missouri, that the league's data is the data that has to be used by the casinos. So the casinos can't go and buy some data feeds that may be cheaper, you know, in a foreign country or something like that. We want to make sure that the integrity of the process is preserved, and that if people decide that they want to bet on a sports game, that they know that they're getting reliable data from the casinos. And then the last thing that it does is it adds an integrity fee. So one of the things that we know from sports betting historically is that there have been times that insiders, whether they be coaches, whether they be other players, whether they be people trying to influence players and get them to shave points or do something to change the outcome of the game, those things do happen. And as sportsbook betting increases across the country, there have been two other states after the Supreme Court case that have already passed it. There are multiple other states that are debating the issue right now alongside Missouri. And what we know is that the teams and the leagues are going to have increased compliance costs trying to monitor and prevent cheating from happening. What our legislation, or at least what the amendment does, is it says that a certain small percentage, 0.25% of the revenue that's generated by the casino has to go back to the leagues in order to pay for those increased compliance costs. To me, that makes sense. The example I always use is if somebody used a Kansas City Chiefs logo on a t-shirt, nobody would dispute the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs get a royalty from that. The same thing is true here. If the casino industry is profiting off of our professional sports teams or our collegiate sports teams, they should get a percentage of that remitted back to them, particularly given the fact that they're going to have increased costs of compliance associated with an increase in sportsbook betting.